It's good to see all of you here this morning. We have a number of our folks that are out today. Of course, anytime there are home football games at Auburn and Tuscaloosa, that means a lot of folks are out. And in addition today, we have a number of folks that are in Nashville with Jody and Carol and with the Sarah Walker Foundation today, and so we hope that they all have a safe journey back. We appreciate your presence. We always do. There's some things that are coming up here at Sherrod, and if you'll notice the front of your bulletin this morning, you will notice that that material and that information is about something taking place on the 16th of October. On that day, we're going to have a number of days sort of rolled into one. We're going to be celebrating Homecoming and Friends and Family Day, and it's also going to be a special day that will be here for our college parents and their families. And we're planning a fellowship meal afterwards, and then as soon as that is completed, we'll come back here in the auditorium for an afternoon session, and then there will be no evening session that night, although there will be a communion service for those that did not have the opportunity to come. So please keep that in mind and start inviting former members here and your friends and your family, and let's have a really special day of worship together on October the 16th. I talk a lot about old songs that we used to sing in our worship assemblies, and most of them taught some great lessons. One of those was number 556 in the Old Songs of Faith and Praise. Lula Klingman Zahn wrote the song years ago. I remember my dad leading it on several occasions. The lyrics are a little unusual. They compare two bodies of water in Israel, the Sea of Galilee and the Dead Sea. Sea of Galilee is a majestic freshwater lake that's fed by the Jordan River and a number of streams and tributaries from the hills of Syria. The lake is the source of much of Israel's drinking water. It also empties to the south as the Jordan River begins there at the southern end of the Sea of Galilee and flows down toward the Dead Sea. At 1,400 feet below sea level, the Dead Sea is the lowest land elevation on earth. It receives its water, of course, from the Sea of Galilee by the Jordan River, but because it is so low in elevation, it never passes along the water that it receives. There's simply nowhere for it to go. The only thing that can happen is for it to evaporate. So as a result, the Dead Sea is some 10 times saltier than the ocean, and almost nothing can live in the Dead Sea. But here are the lyrics to the song, and I want you to pay special attention to them. Verse 1 describes the Sea of Galilee, and verse 2, the Dead Sea. Verse 1, there is a sea which day by day receives the rippling rills, and streams that spring from wells of God or fall from cedared hills. But what it thus receives, it gives with glad, unsparing hand. A stream more wide, with deeper tide, flows on to lower land. There is a sea which day by day receives a fuller tide, but all its store it keeps, nor gives to shore nor sea beside. The Jordan stream, now turned to brine, lies heavy as molten lead. Its dreadful name doth e'er proclaim, that sea is waste and dead. Which shall it be for you and me who God's good gifts obtain? Shall we accept for self alone or take to give again? For he who once was rich indeed laid all his glory down, that by his grace our ransomed race should share his wealth and crown. There are two types of people in this world. There are those people who share the gifts that they receive from God, and then there are those people who hoard the blessings of God for themselves. Mrs. Zahn ended verse 3 by asking basically, which person are you? Are you willing to share your good gifts with others, or do you hoard them? And here she's not necessarily just talking about financial things. She's talking about the gift of love. She's talking about the gift of time. She's talking about the gift of talents. She's talking about the gift of friendship and compassion. And so she asked those simple questions. Reminds me a great deal of the words written by the Apostle Peter in chapter 4 of his first letter. Each of you should use whatever gift you have received to serve others. Now, all of this leads us back to the reading that was shared earlier this morning. It's from the Gospel of Luke, and it's sort of an unnerving parable. It once made a man with three doctoral degrees, one in medicine and one in theology and one in philosophy, to leave civilization with all of its culture and amenities and depart for a very uncivilized part of the world. It induced a man who was recognized as one of the best concert organists in the entire continent of Europe to go to a place where there were no organs to play. It so intensely motivated that man that he gave up a teaching position in one of the great universities of Europe. And he went and he dwelt and dealt with people who were so deprived that they were still living basically in the Dark Ages. You may remember him. His name was Dr. Albert Schweitzer. And the parable that so radically changed his life was this parable, the parable of the rich man and Lazarus. Now, the rich man and Lazarus were neighbors, you know. They saw each other every day. Oh, not socially. No, not that at all. But there was contact. Every day, the rich man saw the beggar at his front gate. We call the rich man Davies. It's spelled actually D-I-V-E-S, but it's pronounced Davies. It's Latin for rich man, and that's the name by which he's been called for centuries. Davies would have felt really very, very comfortable in the society in which you and I live today. You can look at him. He was sort of a progressive type of guy. He was self-indulgent, and of course, this is the age of self-indulgence in which we live. And the contrast between the lifestyles of these two men is just blatantly, blatantly obvious. Davies was a connoisseur. He was a lover of the arts, one who knew and appreciated fine living. If there were 4-star restaurants in Israel, he would be there. If there were 5-star hotels, that's where he would stay. He would have the best chariot. He would have the best servants. He would live in luxury. So as we look at Davies, we see someone who had all of the blessings of this world. And there's nothing wrong with blessings. Remember the Sea of Galilee. Sea of Galilee is a blessed little body of water, and it has continued to be that way through the centuries. But it's blessed because it allows water to flow through it. Now we're told in verse 19 of the book of Luke that Davies habitually dressed in purple. Purple was, of course, the color of royalty because it was the most expensive dye in the ancient world. Only the upper echelon and the high priest could afford the cloth that was dyed with purple. We're also told that his other garments were made of fine linen, and fine linen was the rich style, or the lifestyle of the rich and the famous back in those days. That's man number one. The other man is Lazarus. Lazarus was homeless. We're told in verse 20 that he was a cripple. He barely made it from day to day. He was only able to exist because he lived off leftovers that were thrown to him by Davies. He was just a survivor and nothing more. And in the parable, Jesus says there came a day when these men died. Death, of course, is the great equalizer. Death does not care about our social standing. It does not care about our color, our standing in the community. It does not care about how much influence we have over others. It does not care how much power we share. It cares nothing about what kind of name we have created for ourselves while we've been here on earth. It's simply the great equalizer. And Lazarus, Jesus said, was carried away by an angel into heaven. And when he got there, he occupied a seat of honor next to Abraham. Now, as far as Davies, the rich man, all that Jesus says is that he died and he was buried. Sort of strange, I guess. After all, Davies' funeral must have been something to absolutely remember. You could imagine it would be a tremendous social event. It would have been done with a great deal of pomp and circumstances. Back in those days, there were often people who were paid to come and to cry at funerals, and if that had been the case, I'm sure there was an entire chorus that was there for Davies. Apparently, though, those facts didn't seem to impress Jesus. He did add one additional fact about the death of Davies that may be of interest to us. He simply says that his soul was sent to hell. As I said a minute ago, this is sort of an unnerving story. And I can see why this was the little irritating grain of sand in Albert Schweitzer's oyster. Bothered him tremendously. Let's see why. First of all, this particular parable shows how God reverses the standards of the world. Now, we call this the parable of the rich man and Lazarus. Now, you may notice that the rich man is never actually named in the parable itself. It's the church through the years that has given him the name Dives. Now, in the parable, only the poor man has a name. That's exactly the opposite of the world. In the world, we all know the names of the rich. We know about Bill Gates, and we know about Sam Walton, and Warren Buffett, and Oprah Winfrey. We know the lifestyle of the rich. And yet, with the poor, it's exactly the opposite. Sometimes they're not even named. We refer to them collectively as the poor, or the homeless, or the third world, or the welfare cases. They're the neighbors that we pass by, but never stop to meet really deeply. For generations in the South, African Americans who worked as domestics in white homes were only known by their first names. They were either called Betty or Sally, and no one ever knew the last names. Some of them, as you remember from the movie, were simply known as the help. That's the standard of the world. In many places in this country, there are places still that are known as potter's fields. Potter's fields are graveyards where the poor are buried at no expense. But one of the rules for the potter's fields is that there can be no markers there. That's sort of indicative of how we view the poor. No names. Only small numbers mark each grave. Jesus says in heaven all of that's going to be reversed. God will know the name of every poor person who comes before him. He will know the name of every suffering person who comes before him. Everyone who ever walked the earth. There's a special place in God's heart for the poor. Psalm 41 says, "Happy are those who think about the poor. When trouble comes, the Lord will save them. The Lord will protect them and spare their life and will bless them in the land." I hope God knows my name when I get to heaven, but I do know he will know their names. You can be poor in the eyes of the world, but fabulously wealthy in the eyes of God. And that's what Jesus is suggesting. In heaven, everything is going to be reversed. And that deeply troubled Albert Schweitzer. Second thing you can learn in this parable is that it is troubling because Dives was not a mean man. There's no indication that he ever mistreated Lazarus. There's no indication that he ever kicked him, that he ever chased him away. There's no indication that he ever lectured him about getting up from there and moving on. No indication that he ever lectured him about getting a job. At least we don't have a record if he did. But still, the fact that he didn't do anything that was really mean didn't get him into heaven. Negative innocence is not enough. It never occurred to him that the fate of Lazarus' birth and the fate of his birth could have been changed. Lazarus became not a part of suffering humanity, but to the rich man, he was only a part of the landscape. He was someone that just happened to be there. He saw him, but he didn't really perceive him. In a word, the rich man was indifferent. He was indifferent to his plight. He was indifferent to his hunger, indifferent to his needs. They were the neighbors that never met. Some years ago, before the death of Mother Teresa, there was a television special that depicted the grim human conditions that were part of the people that she ministered to on a daily routine. That particular documentary really troubled me when I saw it. And I think if you had seen it, it would have troubled you too. Now, it showed all of the horror of the slums of Calcutta. It showed her love for the destitute people who walked the streets. The producer did interview her as she made her rounds in that very dreadful place. And it was easy to feel and say, "Oh, I feel sorry for those folks." And then it switched to a commercial. First, lepers. Commercial. Swimsuits. Next, mass starvation. Commercial. Designer jeans. Next, agonizing poverty. Commercial. Fur coats. Next, abandoned babies. Commercial. Ice cream sundaes. Next, people dying. Commercial. Diamond watches. Does that bother you? It's basically the way the world looks at people. They're part of the landscape, but we never really see them as individual human beings. And the irony in that particular documentary was very apparent. There were two worlds that were on display, the world of the poor and the world of the affluent. And it seems that our very culture teaches us that we need to live like the rich man lived. Okay, yeah, we're occasionally plagued by the images of the poor and by someone like Lazarus, but methodically, as soon as we see them, we forget them. And we live our lives in luxury while others live their lives in poverty. But heaven's reversal of fortune one day will awaken us to the fact that we have made a mistake. We should have cared about those that suffered. Parable invites us to sit alongside Lazarus and see the world from his point of view. And that's troubling, because when we do, we look very much like the rich man and not very much like Lazarus. Now, I know what eventually happened to the rich man in this story, and I do not want that to happen to me. And it's easy for me to stand in a pulpit today and preach a lesson like that. But it's very difficult to get away from the culture in which I live and as I go about daily life to really see the needs of those around me. The next thing about having, great thing about having grandchildren is you have an opportunity to watch cartoons again. And one of those that's very cute is the old Garfield the Cat cartoons. There was a cold winter night when he was looking out his window and he saw Odie the dog through the window, and it was snowing outside and the dog couldn't get in, and Garfield thought to himself, "This is horrible. Here I am in the comfort of a warm house, well-fed, and there's Odie outside begging to get in. He's cold, he's hungry. I can't stand it anymore. I just can't stand it." So he gets up, goes to the window, and closes the curtains. Unfortunately, we are tempted to do the same thing. Rather than dealing with the poor, we simply close the curtains. We drive by those on the sides of the street who have the signs that say, "We'll work for food." And we've seen it so much that it's easy just simply to drive by. I really enjoyed a book that was written by David Wilhelm. David is Brother Jack Wilhelm's son. He's a doctor in Birmingham. And he wrote a book talking about some of his experiences, and one of them had to do with just this very thing. David said he and his family were on their way to church on a Sunday morning, and there was a man out on the side of the street with the little sign. And David didn't think a thing about it. And he just went right on through the intersection, and his young daughter, who at that time was, I think, about six, said, "Dad, did you see that?" And she asked him again, "We can't go to church and not do something about that." David said, "It made me feel very guilty." So he turned around and he went and he tried to help that individual, which is what made the little girl's day. And she remembered it. And David wrote in his book that he learned a great lesson that day from his daughter. He learned how easy it was for us to simply look past and see nothing but the landscape. Someone has written, "It's not our badness that will send us to hell, it's our lack of goodness. It's how we close the curtains on those who represent suffering humanity." I think in very real sense, we need to be very careful here. There's a warning. The poor and the disenfranchised are God's special people. We dare not allow them to become part of the landscape. Sometimes I hear people say, "Well, yeah, but Jesus said the poor you have with you always." And that's true. He did. But he never said, "Don't just pass them by. Stop and do something." The third thing we're told is that Dives begs to come back to Earth to warn his brothers. Now, we get the impression they're on the same path that he was. We're told he had five brothers. He wanted to warn his family about their impending fate, and yet he's denied that privilege. Now, I think in a lot of ways, we would like the story of the parable here to end like Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol. You know the story, and Marley, Scrooge's business partner, comes to him with a stern warning about what's going to happen if he continues his present path, and Scrooge changes, and he becomes the kind of person that he should. Now, Jesus does not end his story that way. The request that someone come back from the dead to change somebody's life is flatly denied. And Jesus shouldn't have done that, we think. He should have allowed somebody to come back from the dead and make a difference. But Jesus said, you know, if you do not believe what Moses and the prophets have written, you will not believe even if someone comes back from the dead. Now, the point of all the story in the long run is that Dives was insensitive to the needs of suffering humanity. And because of that, he missed the kingdom of God. He missed because he only saw Lazarus as part of the landscape. And in so doing, he missed the key to heaven. Oh, yeah, the rich man lived sumptuously. He had the best of everything. He added to the economy in a significant way. But he missed the kingdom of God. I think one of the most effective and colorful congressmen to ever go to Washington was a crusty old gentleman from Texas by the name of Sam Rayburn. Sam Rayburn served in Congress for over 50 years, and the last 10 years of those he served as Speaker of the House. But the greatness of Sam Rayburn was not the fact that he held some great political positions, that he had a tremendous amount of power. It was that he never forgot his common touch. One day in Washington, he heard that the teenage daughter of a Washington reporter had died. And so early the next morning, he went over to the reporter's house, he knocked on the door, and he said to him, "I just came by to see what I could do to help." And the reporter, who was just basically someone who was in the press party at the Capitol, said, "Mr. Speaker, I thank you. I didn't even know that you knew who I was. But I don't think there's anything that you can do. We're handling all the arrangements. But thank you so much for coming by." And Sam Rayburn said to him, "Have you had your coffee yet this morning?" And the reporter said, "Well, no." And he said, "Let me make your coffee for you." So he went into the house and he began to fix the coffee in the kitchen. And of course, the reporter was taken back by all of that. And he said, "Mr. Speaker, I thought you were having breakfast this morning at the White House with the president." And Sam Rayburn responded, "Well, I was, but I called the president and told him I had a friend who was having some trouble and I wouldn't be in today." Now that story communicates the essence of the sermon and the essence of Jesus' parable. The Christian walk is a walk of caring, compassion, sharing, noticing the needs of others, and trying to help. And remember, this is not all about just finances. This is about a gift of time. It's about a gift of love and care, about a gift of sharing, about a gift of reaching out to those who are in need. As Christians, that's our responsibility. If you need to respond to the Lord's invitation this morning, as we always do when we come to the end of a service, we encourage people to think very seriously about their relationship with the Lord and about things that need to be done in their life. If you need any help this morning, we encourage you to come as we stand and as we sing.